It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets,
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
William and Kate, by the time they get their turn, they won't be so young and glamorous based on the longevity of these royal family members, right? The Queen Mom died at, what, 101? Elizabeth at 96? So Charles could get a couple of decades as monarch.
Welcome to One Day University. Talks with the world's most engaging and inspiring professors discussing their most popular courses. This podcast is your chance to discover some of our top-rated lectures on your own schedule. I'm Stephen Schragis. We're traveling across the pond to Great Britain, where King Charles III's coronation takes place this weekend. Although Charles became king when his mother, Queen Elizabeth, died last September, the coronation is an important symbolic ceremony steeped in royal tradition. In fact, coronations for British monarchs have been around for over 1,000 years. Professor Julie Taddeo knows this history well. She has given lectures on the legacy of Queen Elizabeth and the monarchy's centuries of royal scandals. Julie is an author and a research professor of history at the University of Maryland. She says the British monarchy's power has evolved quite a bit over the centuries.
If this were before 1688, the monarch would be considered divine. But after the 1688 Glorious Revolution, with William and Mary agreeing to rule with the Bill of Rights, we see after that, over the centuries, pretty much the decline of all of those royal powers. The king or queen will no longer be above the law. They're subject to the authority of Parliament. So today, Charles, like his mother, has the right to give the royal approval to legislation. Doesn't initiate it or really have anything to do with making laws. It's mainly ceremonial. He's the head of state, head of the church, head of the military, head of state of the Commonwealth. But he has the right to be consulted, the right to advise the prime minister, and does play an important role in, with all the royal tours and hosting foreign visitors. And if you look at the Royal UK website, he is, like any monarch, is meant to be a source of national pride, like the human face of government who unifies the nation. And that's no small role to play.
About how many nations are there in the Commonwealth? And how has that changed since Queen Elizabeth's coronation and in recent years?
So when the Queen first learned that she was Queen herself, the first speech that she made was about recognizing how the imperial family was growing up and changing. And so the Commonwealth, of course, changed in response to the changing empire and the loss of certain colonies. That one had already happened before her reign in 1947, obviously Indian independence. And then since 1947 through the 1960s, almost all of the former colonies had gained their independence. So this idea of a Commonwealth of Nations is relatively new. It's now 14 nations since the time of her death. In 2021, Barbados stopped recognizing Elizabeth as head of state, became a republic. Jamaica is considering doing the same. So the numbers may change moving forward. They have to officially recognize him. He doesn't automatically inherit that title. There was talk several days before the coronation that Canada may no longer recognize the British monarch as head of state. Australia just decided to not put Charles's image on their paper currency. They have an indigenous design instead. So, you know, moving forward, we shall see.
I've heard you lecture about Queen Elizabeth before she passed. And it's, as you said, and all of us knew, she was beloved by many, many, many people. Charles is a very different character, though. How popular or unpopular is he?
Well, I do want to say, you know, she had moments of unpopularity as well. But there is a huge difference in their coronations. Britain had come out of those tough years of rebuilding after the war. By 1953, rationing was finally over, and there was this feeling now that the nation was moving forward. It still had some of its empire, with the understanding it was going to change. And she was talking about the imperial family and how she was going to represent everyone. There isn't this feeling of, I think, youthfulness of the nation in the post-war period. And the last few years have been incredibly tough for the world and, of course, for Britain, with Brexit dividing the nation and then the pandemic. It is a different moment in time than 1953. So I think that is a challenge for him. But if we think back to those days after his mother died, there was such an outpouring of affection for him that I have to admit, I was surprised as he walked about the crowds and women were hugging and kissing him. And he didn't seem to mind. So I think that he may do better than I predicted a few months ago.
We'll see how it goes. But I've heard a few people say that. Somehow when his mother died, it seems like perception changed. And when he actually becomes king, let's see what happens then. You said, when you were referring to Charles, the crown will rest heavy on his shoulders. Is there some sentiment that maybe, how can I put this, he's the wrong guy for the job? And what does that mean for the monarchy?
Well, you know, he's been waiting his turn since he was 4 years old. So I know that there were some people before his mother died who said, oh, he's too old. He should just, you know, allow his son to be king. That's not the way it happens. I mean, he's waited for his turn and he's ready. And I think that in those last few years of her life, the queen was really trying to smooth his transition, made things a little bit easier for him. And I think just the reception, the tabloids have been largely favorable and the public has been more favorable to him recently. It's going to be difficult, obviously, to fill those shoes and that crown. It, maybe it won't be as heavy as I once thought. I'm more fair to him now.
The show, The Crown. I've seen it here in the United States. I've heard it's very, very popular in England. Everybody watches it. And that Charles is not too happy with how he is portrayed in that show. Do you think it's actually impacted his popularity in Britain, especially among younger people who didn't know and didn't live through all the scandalous stuff that's in that show?
From what I read, viewership in the UK of The Crown really escalated in the aftermath of Queen Elizabeth II's death. I do think, though, that, you know, even though the royal family said they wanted a disclaimer, and even Judi Dench demanded it from Netflix that it's just historical fiction, I do think it was probably Charles who was feeling upset with the way he was portrayed in the previous season, in the early years of his marriage with Diana. The last season, I felt, was more sympathetic towards Charles. And actually, if we take the series as a whole and we go back to the early years of Charles's life, it really shows that, you know, it's hard to say, oh, the poor prince, but his childhood wasn't always an easy one. His parents were largely absent for a lot of key moments in his life. He lived in the shadow of his, what we would call an alpha male father, and he was more sensitive. From the moment of his birth, when he was presented, you know, on display to the royal courtiers, he's always been public property. So I think in some ways the public can feel for him, But there are certain things that many, both British and American viewers, are a little reluctant to forgive. And that, of course, is the debacle of his marriage to Diana. But his popularity had gone up after his mother died and in the months leading up to the coronation. So we'll see if he gets a boost in the polls after the coronation as well. But I do think the crown has hurt and helped him in some ways.
That's a fair enough answer. Now, my mother is not alive right now, but if she was, she would watch this coronation. But I know what she'd say. She'd say, "I will never forgive him for Diana." And maybe she's not the only one who would say that. How does that factor in? You have thoughts on that?
Well, that's something I've said in the past. You know, I was a girl when I watched Diana get married and a grown woman when I watched her funeral. And those were tough moments. And I think a lot of women, British and American, could relate to her when she told, you know, all of those stories about her life and her battles with mental illness and infidelity. We have to recall, too, that the 25th anniversary of her death was a little more than a week before the Queen's death. So I think back to her BBC interview, right, with Martin Bashir, when she said there were three of us in this marriage. There is that figure of Diana that will always loom over them.
Julie, we had expected Camilla to have the title of Queen Consort, but on the invitation to the coronation, they called her Queen Camilla. How big a deal is that?
It's not as big a deal as I think some people made of it when they saw the invitation. She is still the Queen Consort. That is really her official title. It's just very clunky to call someone Queen Consort Camilla, Queen Consort Mary. So previous queen consorts have typically just been called Queen so-and-so. The fact is that as the queen consort, she'll never be sovereign in her own right. That's why it's significant that people understand what a consort means. So he's the sovereign. He has all of the rights and powers. That doesn't get passed on to her, even though she's getting crowned in the ceremony. So if he predeceases her, she's never queen in her own right to rule. It still goes to William. So I think it was a couple of things. The public has slowly been prepared. First, she was going to be the princess consort. Then Elizabeth, before her death, said, no, she's the queen consort. Because for some people, they still held in their hearts Diana's memory that she should have been the queen consort. But now Charles really wants to prepare the public for her role and to make them accept her more. And I think that's one of the significant reasons for removing a consort from the invitation. But she is still queen consort.
What do people think of Camilla? When Diana was alive, that was a complicated situation. But let's skip to 2023. What's the perception of her now?
Well, when they married in 2005, people booed, right? But now his marriage to her has lasted longer than his marriage to Diana. So I think the public has largely gotten used to them. I don't know if their merchandise from their marriage sells as well as even still the Charles and Diana merchandise. She is less popular than Charles, who is less popular than his mother, but she's still more popular than Andrew. So that's a good thing. And I think, you know, the tabloids have been kind of working in her favor since the Queen's funeral. And we have to remember, events like funerals, weddings, births, coronations, it gives all the royals a boost. It may be temporary, but I think this is going to give her a boost as well.
After the break, what to expect at the coronation and what the future holds for William and Kate.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're just a couple of days away from the coronation. Certainly not the first coronation in British history. But how will this coronation be different than any other before it?
Well, he's the oldest monarch to be crowned. I think some things we're going to see will just be fairly standard, right? Operation Golden Orb, he's going to be anointed with the holy oil. He'll get the orb, the coronation ring, the scepter will be blessed. He'll sit in, you know, Edward's chair. Those things are standard. A couple of things which maybe to us as Americans, we don't think are a big deal, but I think are kind of significant. Because Charles has talked so much about streamlining things, trying to reduce costs. At the same time, he wants his special day. So one thing that we'll observe is that the procession route on the way to the Abbey is going to be shorter. And they'll also be riding in the Diamond Jubilee State Coach. That coach was built for Queen Elizabeth's 60th anniversary, or Diamond Jubilee. And it has heat and air conditioning, and it's a lot comfier than the golden coach. But he and Camilla will ride back in that gold coach on their way back to the palace so the crowds can see them. And I think everyone kind of expects that gold coach. That is still relatively new. That's been used since the time of William IV in 1831. But Queen Elizabeth II had said that at the time that she had to ride in it both ways, it's a horrible ride. It's so uncomfortable and bumpy. So I think it's for his comfort, but also to show we're streamlining things. The other thing is that the crown that Camilla will be wearing when she is crowned during the coronation, typically there's a new tiara design for all of these ceremonies. Instead, they're sort of recycling and reusing a crown that was Queen Consort Mary from 1911. It's got 2,000 diamonds in it, so it's not a slouchy crown. But that does, I think, cut costs, and it looks like they're being mindful of certain things. So those, to me, those are actually significant because they're all embedded with very old traditions.
The Queen's Jubilee, not that long ago, was very expensive. And now we have a coronation. Is there a feeling that maybe too much money is being spent on all this stuff?
There's always that complaint made. I think about the Queen's first jubilee in 1977. And my daughter, who loves the Sex Pistols, if you think about their anthem of protest, right, of God Save the Queen, because those were really tough years of recession, global recession. And what's the idea of spending money when people are suffering? Same thing when Charles and Diana got married. It had been a very bad winter, the winter of discontent. And so spending money on a fairy tale wedding. So whenever there's one of these events, that criticism is made, like money could be spent in a better way. And Charles was, I think he heard some of that, but at the same time, he wants his day in the sun.
Do we know if Harry and Meghan will be at the coronation?
So Harry will. Meghan has said that she's staying behind. It's their child's birthday. And I think that's a good compromise. But I think that it'll, some people will criticize her for not being there. But if she was there, she'd be criticized.
What role will Prince William play in the coronation? There's going to be a focus on William. How's he going to be involved in all of this?
I think we already saw, like, immediately after the Queen died, that William and Kate were really taking a front and center role, getting more responsibilities. Even before that, they had done one of those royal tours, and it didn't go so well when they were touring some Commonwealth countries who were kind of saying, we don't really want you anymore. So they're going to have to do their work, too, to convince Commonwealth nations through their royal tours to stay a part of the Commonwealth. We'll see if they'll succeed. They still give the youth and glamour to the royalty. At 40, they're still both very good looking. And the tabloids have been really working in Kate's favor as the good princess. Kind Kate, they dub her all of these nice things, even though they didn't love her so much in the beginning. But now she's the good princess. So I think as a royal couple, they're gonna bring the youth and glamour that Charles and Camilla can't. But also Charles has had to step back from a lot of his favorite charities. Monarchs, you know, can't be outspoken about their overall views. William and Kate, of course, can then take over some of those functions. And by the time they get their turn, they won't be so young and glamorous based on the longevity of these royal family members, right? The Queen Mum died at, what, 101? Elizabeth at 96? So Charles could get a couple of decades as monarch.
Well, let me follow up on something you just said. You said a king can't really be outspoken in his views. Why not?
He's already being reined in. They have to be really politically neutral. They can't side with one party over the other. Now, there are ways, of course, in which they can kind of leak their views. Thinking back to like the Thatcher years, and that one of the newspapers supposedly leaked a story that the Queen was upset with the Conservatives, especially Thatcher, for her support of apartheid and also some of her social welfare policies, which the Queen thought was too cruel. And then, you know, during the Scottish referendum and Brexit, you know, the royals kind of leaked their views about that. They are not supposed to express their support for one political issue over another. Charles, as prince, was definitely more outspoken, sometimes got himself in trouble over that. His big issue, of course, about climate change, it's a very political issue, as we know, but it's such an important one. So I'm hoping that that is the mantle that his son will take up, you know, advocating for policies in that regard. But Charles can't now.
Julie, let's get down to it. I'm an American, and I admit I have trouble understanding how a monarchy can even exist in a modern country like England. And I know there are some in Britain who agree with me. What are your feelings about that? Could the monarchy be past its prime? Will it ever go away?
We've heard this so many times over the years. I mean, I think back to, what was it, 1957, when the scandal where the aristocrat journalist said the Queen was too priggish, and then he had to apologize. People attacked his home because how dare you insult the monarch. When Diana and Charles divorced, the monarchy was over. When Harry and Meghan gave the interview for Oprah, people said the monarchy is over. People on both sides of the political spectrum, the majority still poll, at least the last one I saw, it's favoring a constitutional monarchy, not a republic like the U.S. Numbers, as I've said before, among younger people, there are more among younger people, they do favor doing away with the monarchy. But it's still not a majority. And I think that events like this, the royals get bumps from it. They're what we call a tonic to the nation. It brings people together. It's a source of national pride. And Americans, you know, we watch shows like Downton Abbey and Bridgerton, and The Crown and every news show in the morning always gives us, you know, tidbits about the royals. So Americans, we pride ourselves on a republic and a democracy, but we love the stuff about aristocracy. What we don't have, there's something kind of romantic about it. I don't think it's so romantic to many British people. And don't forget it, it's also divided. For people who, when the Queen died, there were people in Northern Ireland who were mourning her, and there were others who were kind of not celebrating, but not upset. So it's not uniform. You really got to break it down by region, I think, as well as age, how people feel about the monarchy. I'm not predicting its end because people do that all the time and they're always wrong.
Julie, thank you so much for doing this. I learned a lot. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this because it's a big event. Thank you again.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to watching it all.
Thanks for joining us here at One Day University. Sign up at our website, onedayu.com, to become a member and access over 700 full-length video lectures from the world's finest professors. You can also download our app. There, you can learn more about today's episode and watch University of Maryland professor Julie Taddeo's lectures on Queen Elizabeth, royal scandals, Downton Abbey, and more. Join us next time when we talk about America's role as the fast food nation.
On average, 9 million pounds of potatoes have to be available in America daily in order for fast food to continue to do its work. And so the pressures that it puts on the American agriculture system, the meat processing system, is just shocking.
One Day University is a production of iHeart Podcasts and School of Humans. If you're enjoying the show, leave a review in your favorite podcast app. You can also check out other Curiosity podcasts to learn about history, pop culture, true crime, and more.
School of Humans.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.